Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. Epilogue.
Most illuminating, Madame Torrio, Count Valian said when the woman had finished her tale. I know that was difficult for you.
He pushed the snifter of liquor closer to her.
This may steady your nerves.
Thank you, my lord, the woman said.
Her hand shook as she reached for the glass, prompting her to bring up her other hand to steady it as she brought it to her lips. She paused in surprise as the aroma reached her nose.
Oske, your husband said you had a fondness for it.
Of course he did, she replied with a smile, closing her eyes and inhaling the vapor, the tremors in her hands subsiding.
Da was a master cooper, he was. Half the Oskean wine in County Ferlin went into his barrels.
She sipped the liquor, rolling it around her mouth.
Not one of his barrels, this. From...
She took another sip.
County Mayor.
Valian chuckled.
I did not realize you were such a connoisseur, madame.
Not much call for Oske down here, she replied, with so much rum at hand. And Malachi is much closer than Terrandor. Wine and brandy are the favorite imports.
She took a longer drink, visibly relaxing as she swallowed.
Don't need to be reminded of Terrandor too often, to be honest. Made my life here, I have. Can't go forward if you're always looking over your shoulder.
Well said, Valian replied, sipping his own glass. I apologize for asking you to tell me that story.
No need, my lord. When I was younger, I told the tale to those monks, and I swore I'd never speak of it again. But when Paladin proposed to me, thought he should have the chance to change his mind, I did. So I told him the whole story then and there.
She smiled.
Didn't change his mind, daughter be thanked, but he did say that someday I might have to tell the tale to you. And when I heard that Kohaian captain at dinner talking about the battle with the pirate...
She broke off, taking a long breath.
Guessed you'd be summoning me soon, I did.
She took another sip before setting the glass down, her hands steady.
I'm very grateful, my lord, to you and her ladyship, for taking me into your home and your lives. Telling this to you is a small price to pay for all you've done for me.
Valian raised a hand, brushing the compliment away.
Paladin's choice was our gain as well. Your merchant experience gives you a unique insight into commerce that none of my appointed ministers can provide me. And surely my wife has told you how much money our household has saved since she put you in charge of the accounts. But more than that, you and Paladin have given my poor two strong sons, who, triad willing, will serve Drallion in his turn every bit as effectively as Paladin serves me. You have chosen to make your life here, and...
There was a quiet knock on the door, and the Count fell silent as a servant entered, carrying a note.
A message from Major Torrio, my lord.
The Count accepted the note and read it carefully, twice.
Send word to the quartermaster and garrison commander. We will begin assembling another team of wagons, with medical supplies and appropriate escort, to depart for the Abbey as soon as possible. Then inform the household staff that the company of Kohaians in the service of Duke Stephen will be arriving in the next day or two. Have rooms prepared for them next to Captain Dutrom's.
After the servant bowed and left, Valian handed the note to Madame Torrio.
He left a message for you at the bottom, almost as if he knew you'd be here.
Damn infuriating it is when he does that, she said with a rueful smile, which widened as she read her husband's message. First part's in code, I see.
Yes, the Count replied. First he asks for more medical supplies and troops to safeguard them. Then he gives a list of the Kohaians that he's collected.
He took the note back and studied the list again.
Dutrom, of course, both of the Duke's left hands, a retired Sabrian captain. Oh, and the daughter of Draxon Fane. Very interesting.
Heard the Fanes were no friends of Duke Stephen, I have.
You're correct, my dear. I imagine we will hear some interesting stories over dinner. No mention of Draxon's son or Oric Fane, and we know they headed up there as well.
He nodded at some other names without comment, then looked up.
You should know this before they arrive. One of the Duke's left hands is an elf.
Madame Torio went very still.
An elf? Same one that cursed the ship in your harbor?
It appears so.
With slow, deliberate care, Madame Torio brushed a lock of graying brown hair out of her face, then lifted her glass to take another drink.
Thank you for telling me, my lord.
Is this going to be a problem for you?
No.
Her response was too quick, too sharp.
Not my place to say who's allowed beneath your roof.
But you don't think I should allow her beneath it.
My lord, there's men working day and night to fix that ship in the harbor, but there's no forgetting how she looked when she first sailed in. And that tale Dutrom told at dinner's not half of what her sailors say happened out there. If it was up to me, I'd not let such a creature as that within bowshot of the city walls.
She bowed her head, embarrassed at Valian's surprise.
My apologies, my lord. Old habits.
We have little experience with elves in the Frieze. I was not aware your feelings toward them ran so deep.
Seeing what I've seen, my lord, shouldn't be a surprise.
She took another sip from her glass.
Dunstan used to talk to them, if he could. They didn't always speak Terrandon well enough. Those that could understand him weren't always willing to talk, and those that were, well, their answers were never enough for him. Eventually he decided he'd seek answers from humans and started sending letters ahead of us to the Abbey.
She raised her head and met the Count's eyes.
Can't trust elves, my lord. Not with the truth, not with your life.
I see.
Valian swirled the liquor in his glass, inhaling the vapors.
I will consider your words very carefully. Thank you again for everything.
She recognized the shift in his tone and set the glass back on the table before rising from her chair.
Good night, my lord, she said, dropping into a curtsy.
Good night, Moira.
Got another one, Tebby,
called the first of two Myporian soldiers as they brought the litter into the tent.
Where should we put him?
Their compatriot looked up from his clipboard.
Over there, next to those other two that just came in. And keep it quiet. The fellow there finally fell asleep.
He came over as the litter was maneuvered past a row of cots, peering down at the man in it.
Hold up, Del. Is this one still alive?
Only just,
the first soldier confirmed.
We found him in a room just off the gatehouse, on the floor, all by himself. He's in a really bad way. We weren't sure he'd survive being lifted into the litter.
He chuckled, speaking in a low voice.
Manio here thought it might be a mercy to cut his throat and end it.
I did not,
his fellow litter-bearer hissed.
Don't let the Balm priests hear you talk like that,
warned Tebby, glancing around, his own voice as quiet as his friend's.
Not ever. Not even in jest. We find the wounded, we bring them here. That's our orders. Let the priests take it from there.
He leaned down to look at the dying man and winced in disgust.
How'd he end up like this? Looks like someone beat him half to death. And he's been stabbed as well. Aye, Del agreed, and he's the only one we found alone as well.
He shook his head.
It's like the others left him to die. Let the Balm priests sort it out.
Tebby urged,
I'll help you get him on the cot.
As they made the transfer, the dying man suddenly awoke with a groan, feebly struggling in their grasp.
Sorry, friend, Tebby said once the process was done. Just lie quiet now. One of the green ladies will be along quick as she can.
Del shook his head.
Don't know what else they can do for this poor bastard. Not for us to decide when a man's life is over, Del,
Tebby said. He paused, looking around once more.
Triad's given that right to them.
Del and Manio stared at Tebby.
You mean Del? Call it the daughter's true mercy, I hear,
Tebby whispered.
Cup of red tea, very sweet. The sugar hides the taste. One drink and your eyes close forever. Quick, peaceful. Sounds delicious,
the man on the cot suddenly croaked, laughing weakly as all three soldiers took a step back. Then his eyes closed again, his breath coming in quick gasps as he writhed slowly on the cot like an insect pinned to the mounting board. Tebby looked over his shoulder and waved someone over.
Mother, he said with relief as the green-clad figure drew close. We've found another one, but I fear he's in a bad way.
The soldiers made room for the woman, watching as she bent over the man, her face careworn beneath a green wimple. Her frown deepened as she examined his abdomen.
Yes, my son, very bad.
Aside from the knife wound, Del offered, looks like he's lost a few fingers as well, on his left hand there.
Hmm?
The woman glanced over, shaking her head a moment later.
No, no, he lost those fingers some time ago.
A gentle hand touched the weathered, pale face.
Can you hear me, my son?
The man on the cot opened his eyes, looking up at the priest and soldiers around him.
Thirsty.
We will get you some water.
No,
he grated, his voice carrying an echo of old power, the snap of command.
I have just heard, he went on, that you green bitches brew a drink so strong no man ever asks for a second round.
The priest blanched as the soldiers around her went very still.
Is it true?
Leave us,
the priest ordered, recovering her composure. The soldiers gratefully retreated, muttering to themselves.
If we did such a thing, my son, she said in a low voice, it would only be given to those who are prepared to face the triad's judgment.
The man laughed, a thin wheeze of air slipping past his filthy teeth.
If you are forbidden to speak of it, of course, I understand. My father was a scale priest, you know. He too had secrets only to be shared within his order. Humor me, woman. Very soon only the triad will be able to hear me talk of your red tea, if they exist at all.
If they exist? But you said your father was...
A pious man, so focused upon the next world that he had no understanding of this one. He taught me the Book of the Triad until I could recite it by heart, but little else of value. So, naturally, the day I left home to seek my fortune, I lost my money, my innocence, and my faith in short order. The first was taken from me, the second I gave up willingly, and the third...
He sighed, his lips twisting into a grin.
I don't recall how I lost that. I certainly never went back to look for it.
The priest bowed her head.
You are in great pain. It is common for folk to speak this way when under such duress, to say things they do not mean.
Oh, no, I mean every word, woman.
He savored her discomfort, her pain distracting him from his.
I believe we have reached the part where you ask me if there is anything I wish to confess.
Any burdens carried into the next life
shall be weighed upon the Father's scales, he completed. Verse 12 of the confessional prayer. I know all the words. As for my burdens, they are mine, bought and paid for, and their weight does not trouble me in the least.
You cannot receive absolution unless you repent, the priest told him, horrified.
Repentance is for sheep, he snarled, not wolves. On land or sea, wolves do what they will without regret or guilt. If they are strong enough, clever enough, they live. If not, they die.
He made another wheezing laugh.
Everything I have done in this life, I would do again. Except, he sighed, except perhaps when we spy the Kohayan bark sailing for Maipo no more than 2 weeks ago. I gave the order to chase. That has turned out to be a poor decision.
He groaned as another wave of pain washed over him.
Save your prayers, priest. The only thing I ask of you is the only thing anyone really asks of the daughter. Take my pain.
The green-clad priest stared at him for a long moment, then bowed her head in prayer before standing.
Stay with him, she told Tebby as she approached the soldiers. I will return shortly. You two, she said to the others, continue searching the area for more wounded.
All three bowed respectfully to her as she bustled quickly past them out of the tent. Then Del and Manio nodded in farewell to Tebby before leaving themselves, the litter tucked under Del's arm. Tebby came over to the dying man, who was looking at the blonde woman lying next to him.
So they caught you as well, Mafil?
He whispered with a bitter smile.
Is she dead?
He asked.
No,
Tebby replied.
But she's taken a hard blow to the head, not sure if she'll awaken.
I cannot see who is on the other side of her. Is it her husband?
Tebby was surprised by the question.
Well, I don't think so. He's not dressed as a pilgrim, for one thing, but they were brought in together. Heard he's one of the scholars from inside the abbey, hurt in the fighting.
I see,
the man replied, his head lolling back to face the canvas roof.
One more puzzle to leave behind, I suppose.
His eyes glazed over for a moment. Then he gave a start.
Are you still there?
I'm here, friend.
The man shifted on the cot, his pain rising again.
It hurts less when I am talking to someone. Would you like to hear a story? A story about magic, pirates, and treasure?
Treasure?
Oh, yes, my friend. More treasure than you can imagine, and a map leading to it. It would be quite an adventure to hunt for it, but it appears others must enjoy that chase.
He waited for the soldier's reply, frowning when one did not come.
Can you hear me?
There was no response.
Daughter's tits, he groaned. I'm already dead. Now who do I tell my story to?
I'll hear it, came another voice, somewhere out of his line of sight. But keep your voice down, or you'll wake him.
The man tilted his head back, staring at the two figures who stepped out of a dark corner of the tent. Even upside down, he recognized the tall man's shock of red hair, his scarred face, and the young woman's tumble of thick black curls. Molly stepped around the litter and touched Tebby on the shoulder.
Why don't you sit down, friend? Easier to sleep that way.
Sluggishly, the soldier turned around and toddled over to his chair. Within moments, he was snoring quietly.
Have we time for this? Liam asked. Praise will be back any moment she will.
No one'll come in here, Molly replied, kneeling down next to the dying man. Seen to it, I have.
She peered into the man's face, her expression tight and tired.
Said you had a story to tell, you did. I'll hear it, and everything else you have to tell.
The man began, but his words became a groan as the pain rose once more.
Want to bring him as well, do you? Liam asked, doubtful. Came in here for for a vet we did.
Aye, and the one next to her, Molly replied, her pupils dilating as she examined the dying man's body from head to foot. Saw him outside my poor, you said, one of the elf's guards. That's two with information on our enemies. And this makes three. Trust in the triad, Liam.
Liam scowled.
Aye, lass, just wondering how we'll get them all out of here. Carrying one I could manage, two perhaps, but you really want all three.
Molly nodded.
Dealing with spies we are. When mother used spies, never took the word of any one at full value. Put the same questions to each she did, then compared the answers. We'll do the same.
She frowned.
But you're right. Be hard to get out of here it will, carrying three.
The dying man twisted on the cot, a groan squeezing between his clenched teeth, but Molly put a finger to his mouth. Shh. And the pain became something else, the sharp stabbing agony changing into a tingling itch, like ants were crawling on the inside of his skin. The sensation was localized at first, concentrated around his wound, but then it expanded, filling his entire body. His teeth ground together as his hands trembled helplessly at his sides, and through it all, his gaze was locked with Molly's, drawn past her dilated pupils into the depths of her eyes. Then it was over, and she was stumbling away from him, giving Liam no resistance as he caught her.
Him first, lass? Why?
Easier for three to carry two than the other way round, she whispered, taking long, slow breaths. And he was the one in greatest need. Didn't have but a few minutes left.
Consciousness returned to the man on the cot in a rush. His hands flew to his abdomen to test the flesh, then froze. Carefully, almost fearfully, the right hand reached out to touch the left. His head snapped up, eyes wide as he stared down at his hands, turning them back and forth. Then he brought his left hand up to his mouth and bit down on each new finger, gasping in pain and amazement four times. A moment later, he turned his head to see Molly and Liam watching him. It was obvious the girl was waiting for him to speak, so he remained silent, gauging her response. After several seconds, she frowned.
"Can talk the birds out of the trees when you've a mind to do so," she said at last. "Best start now. Wasn't anything wrong with your tongue before, when you were turning the faithful to heresy?"
"What should I say?"
he replied, rubbing his fingers together, savoring the sensation.
"Thank you," Liam suggested.
The man shrugged.
"Perhaps, but I have never been one to accept gifts at face value, mon ami. I will withhold thanks until I know the price."
Liam glowered, but Molly put a hand on the big man's chest.
"Truth," she replied, "you came here with this woman and the other one, claiming to be the Triad Reborn."
"Ah, mademoiselle," he corrected her, "I never made that claim. If the pilgrims came to that conclusion, it was their faith that led them there."
"Never heard you deny it when they called you the Father Reborn either," Molly threw back. "Didn't have to say it direct to put the thought in their heads. Then last night, two men were captured outside the camp who swore you were a pirate and the two with you spies."
"Ah," he said, "so that was what lit today's fuse."
He looked at his hands again, wiggling his fingers against each other.
"So, you two are here, but where are the others? Donal?"
He grinned, catching a reaction from them.
"Ah, he's dead, is he? What about your mother? Still busy inside? Or did she die in the siege?"
Molly glared at him.
"Mother's no part of this, and she'll be answering questions, not asking them. Could have let you die right here, but instead you owe me your life and four fingers to spare. You mentioned price. The price is that I'll hear nothing but truth from your lips until I decide the debt's paid."
"And if I can, as you so elegantly put it, talk the birds from the trees, how will you catch me in a lie?"
Her expression shifted to a sardonic smile.
"Lie to me and find out. That's my price. Refuse it, and we part ways here."
He frowned, puzzled.
"That's it? Truly?"
"Truly. After Liam puts you back as we found you."
Liam's sudden smile matched hers as he put his hand on his sword. The man laughed quietly, nodding to her in respect.
"Well played, my dear."
He looked back and forth between them, then shrugged.
"Your price is acceptable, and may I say, thank you for the gift."
Molly rolled her eyes as she disentangled herself from Liam's arms.
"Watch him. I'll check on the other two."
Liam nodded, his hand still on his sword, as the man got to his feet.
"What's your name, pirate?"
"Sidwa,"
he began, then broke off, looking down at his hands again.
"No, that no longer applies, does it? My father named me Robert, but I will not answer to that."
He smiled.
"Most recently, I was given the name René. That will do. That is my name now."
"René, then," Liam said. "Thinking about betraying us, you are."
"Of course," he said, grinning at Liam's surprise. "Oh, you've been very clear on what would happen to me if I lied. And I know your fears. First chance I get, I will plunge a dagger into your heart and escape. Something like that?"
Liam looked confused.
"Something like that."
René nodded.
"So you will watch me like a hawk at all times, sleep with one eye open, test me occasionally to see what I will do."
With a sigh, he shook his head.
"How exhausting."
"We should just kill you now, then?" Liam asked. "That's the wiser course?"
"By no means, mon ami. You have many questions, and I promise to do my best to help you find answers to them. But my mind is bursting with questions as well. Where else am I like to find those answers than by helping you?"
Liam considered this, looking doubtful.
"Heard you talking to the priest about wolves before. That's how you see yourself? You're a wolf?"
"What man ever sees himself as a sheep?" René said with a laugh. "But yes, the comparison is apt for us."
"Us?" Liam interrupted. "So now we're wolves, too?"
Renee was about to respond when Molly rejoined them.
"It's done," she yawned. "Let's get back to Claude and Gwynnen."
"Are they with us as well?" Renee asked. "What a delightful reunion this will be."
Liam ignored him as he studied Molly with some concern.
"You all right, lass? Healed those two as well, did you?"
"Not completely," Molly replied. "Well enough to carry out if here they are. Won't wake till morning, either."
She shook her head in weary surprise.
"Harder to start the job and leave it half-finished than I'd thought. Like changing course midstream."
Liam glanced at Renee. "Take the girl," he muttered, stepping over to the other litter to pick up the man, whose skin was so pale it nearly matched the wrap of thick bandages around his upper leg.
"What was that you were saying before?" Molly asked Renee. "Werewolves?"
"In a way," Renee said, hoisting Yvette into his arms. "Wolves travel as a pack, coming at their prey from many directions. By each asking questions the others might not, we may get more answers together than any of us would alone."
"Don't talk like you're an equal partner in all this," Molly warned him. "You're not. Best remember that. Heard you telling Liam that you're thinking of betraying us. Still sleep with one eye open, I will."
"As you wish, my dear. I, however, will sleep with both eyes closed, secure in the knowledge that so long as I keep my part of our bargain, you will keep yours, and I will awake each morning with 10 fingers.
"And there go the birds out of the trees," the girl sighed. "Just remember, I catch you in a single lie, it's over."
"And enough blathering about wolves," Liam muttered as he rejoined them, the sleeping man slung over his shoulder. "Damn lot of nonsense."
"Of course," Renee replied.
As he followed Molly out of the tent, Liam bringing up the rear, Renee gazed about him in wonder as Molly led them through the Myporian camp, past guards who paused in mid-conversation as the group drew close, then resumed their talk a moment later as if nothing had happened. Shifting Yvette's weight in his arms, he smiled, anticipating the game ahead.
Well, that's not as bad a cliffhanger as Book 2's was, now is it? I hope you liked it. I won't extend this final episode too long, except to let you know that I've also put together one more episode of Behind the Curtain, where I'll bring you guys up to speed on the twists and turns my life has taken since starting Book 3, answer a few more of your questions, and add a few speculations about future developments for Tales of the Left Hand. So, until next time, take care.
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.